Folks, welcome inside the Parisi Palace, high above 2919 East Broadway. This is the Jake Feinberg Show on KEVT Power Talk, 1210 AM, Sahuarita, Tucson. Thank you so much for making us part of your day today. And my guest today is an avatar, a guy who has been creating improvisational music and lyrics and melodies and harmonies for roughly the last six decades. He continues to do it in a prolific fashion. Marty Balin, welcome to the Jake Feinberg Show.
How you doing, Jake?
Marty, I think this is important. The beginnings of your creations, occurred in the early to mid-60s, but I wanted you to talk about how the beat experience impacted you when you moved out to Northern California.
The beat guys, the beatniks?
Yeah,
the beat writers and everything?
Ginsberg and Ferlinghetti.
Well, I was like a teen, growing up, and we used to go down there to the clubs and, go to the readings and, watch the great poets read. I even saw, the great Nas himself, Lord Buckley read one time in my basement in my house with a jazz band, yeah. It was really cool. And, I saw Ginsberg and, all those guys, Kerouac and, I was really impressed by all that. But, the jazz music was happening too at the same time. They had a lot of cool clubs and things, and you could sit behind chicken wire if you were underage and watch all the great stuff going on,
Well,
so I was influenced a lot by all that stuff.
Right. Well, let's go deeper here. I mean, when you talk about a backing jazz band, are you talking about like Cal Jader or, the 50s? Who was backing him? Who was backing up?
I don't know who was, but just some jazz cats playing some jazz stuff, I was leaving with Ralph Mathis, an old buddy of mine, friend of brother of Johnny Mathis, and we were going out from my house where I lived on Central Street in the 8th District, and downstairs in the basement, the King and Queen of Reno, these beatnik King and Queen of Reno, were having a big celebration, and we stopped in and said hi. They had asked us to, and there was Lord Buckley, man, reading in front of a jazz band. It was a staggering moment for me.
Dave Getz, the drummer from Big Brother, was talking to me about this was a facility, a place where you, similar to today with medicinal marijuana, where you can go with a marijuana card and get herb. This, the League for Internal Freedom, was where you could get pure Sandoz acid. And I want to know the first time that you accessed Sandoz acid.
Oh, well, we had read, Ginsberg's Yahi letters and, Aldous Huxley, and so we were excited by this drug, we had read about it, and we were looking forward to the day we would finally come across it, and then one time we got some acid, early days of the Jefferson airplane, I remember, and first day I took it, I had a fantastic time. I remember the Bill Thompson was with me, and you'd take it and have one guy straight, in case you went crazy or something.
Right, right.
He was my straight man. He took it first, I was his straight man. I don't know if he enjoyed it as much as I did, but I took it, I had a great time, And he was my straight man. In fact, we went roaming up in the hills of Haight-Ashbury in the early morning hours, and it was raining, and it looked like, raindrops were turning into colored splashes like Walt Disney. And, out of somewhere came this black guy who tried to rob us with his knife, and he was shoving it in my face, and I was going, ooh, what a beautiful knife. And, oh, you're so pretty. And pretty soon I eventually had my arms around the guy, and the guy was saying, hey, you gotta take this mother to the hospital. He's crazy, And, and he left us alone, But I was like, I remember the knife was sparkling like the sword of Excalibur or something to me, And I thought he was the most beautiful guy, this black guy shining in the night. And I was, I was totally swamping him with my admiration and amazement. And he was like, whoa, and he backed off.
He's like, who did I run into on this trip?
Yeah, really,
this is nuts,
crazy.
Man. This guy's nuts. Well, no, I mean, let me just be clear. I was born in 1978. So when you talk about Ginsberg's letters. What was he talking about? This is for my generation, my daughters.
He had a book out in City Lights called The Yahee Letters.
Can you talk about what he was experiencing? What was so exciting for you to want to get your hands on that acid?
Well, you were talking about, meeting God and, coming out of your body and flying and, I mean, when you take acid, a lot of strange things can happen. Anything your mind can imagine, you will do, Geez, just think, I remember, taking the acid and, every night for like 3 years, for Christ's sake. It was like, we'd get dosed or, Owsley would be there every night with something new he invented. And, it was like, I remember watching Singing to the Crowd. It was like the Dante's Inferno with their hands swaying, the way they, the hippie girls dance. And, and it was like, I used to think to myself, wow, this is Dante's Inferno. And there I was on the center of the stage singing to him, making him sway, It was fun. I had a good time with it, actually.
Well, no, and it's, listen, I've talked to so many Cat, Terry Haggerty, Gregorico, Michael Shreve. Mm-hmm. I mean, the list goes on and on. And I have interviewed over 500 cats, and a lot of them lately I've been talking to about metaphysical, the transcendental experience, out-of-body experiences. Can you talk, could you talk to the audience about a time you did acid for 3 straight years, basically? Could you talk about a time on stage where you left your physical body on the stage?
Oh, yeah. I used to have out-of-the-body experiences all the time, right from the first chord, as soon as I started to sing, bam. I remember I'd be up in the balcony looking down at myself singing and just, In fact, one time was very interesting. I was in the Fillmore East auditorium, the old Fillmore East.
Sure.
And I was up in the balcony, astral body, watching myself sing. And I'm not kidding you, this guy in the audience looked up to me and gave me the high sign.
Both views are different once your mind is opened up. You're not as privy to all the brainwashing that we get in our lives every day,
mm-hmm.
whether it be through the media or whatnot, And it's like when you read literature and see movies and experience other world views, it changes your life, and music is part of that. Music under the influence of hallucinogenics and mind-expanding marijuana, whatever. It's just it's a different world opens up.
All right, Mr. Ballin, who was that?
Who was that?
Yep.
Mickey Hart?
Richard Loren.
Oh, Richard Loren.
Yes, oh. Richard Loren.
Oh, cool.
So
yeah, he just had a book out.
That's right, rock memoir, High Times. But I'm asking you, please personalize that, the esoteric, the multidimensional self. Tell me about that period of time. I know you could not stand cocaine. So, talk about the idea of accessing a different consciousness or being able to mimic different consciousnesses using these types of hallucinogenic drugs and the music.
You're growing as an artist and you're trying to get somewhere, like me as a singer and, in bands and things and being part of the music scene and learning how to do what you do as well as you can. And drugs come into it along the way and they add to opening you up some, and you are open to more. Maybe you hear more. Maybe you can listen better. But you eliminate the idea that you are the only thing there, that's making it happen. Like when you're singing on stage, you have to be totally free to let it come out.
Right.
And get out of your way. But you also have to listen to yourself, And you can never get off on yourself and forget where you are and what you're doing, But you have to be totally free from that when you're doing it so that it just flows like wind, through you, It's that moment there is almost like taking acid for me, anyway. I mean, when I reach that, I fly. You know, I just actually feel like I'm floating over the audience and gathering up all their energy, you know, and just lifting me up higher and higher with the melody and the, you know, the music and the rhythm. And that moment to me is the same gratification and understanding of what it's all about that I got from I remember when we did our first album, the guys from Crawdaddy came and they interviewed me, and they were telling me all these things that my songs meant, you know.
Right.
And I thought that was interesting that they saw all these things in what I was writing. And to me, they, you know, I didn't mean that, but if they saw that, that's okay with me. I don't care, you know. You know, everybody takes away from a song what it means to them, and that's good, you know. I mean, I try to write songs that leave it open so much that you can make your own movie out of it, you know. You know, for me, it's just a fun thing to do, and also because as a singer, I need songs, and nobody else is writing what I want to sing, so... or say what I want to say, so I want to say certain things to people, so I sit down and say, okay, I want to say this, this is what I'm going to say, I'm going to say this, okay, how do I say it, okay, okay, key of G, bam, bam, you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, it's just, it's a fun thing to do, and I also love, you know, getting chord changes or something from one of my guitar players or something, and you know, and then I work with them, and I say, now how can I make a song out of this? How can I sing against this? What is the music saying to me? You know, what, you know, I try to put the right word with the right note, you know, and if you get that, man, you know, you can explode the world.
Can you just you know, I know what was going on in Millbrook with Timothy Leary, but the acid tests, they happened in California once a week, thereabouts, and like, can you talk about being part of that? You know, I mean, they'd fill up a bathtub and you drink this liquid acid. Is that how it worked?
Well, yeah. In the early days, yeah, the acid test was down at the old Longshoreman Hall, and that was cool. But they, you know, when we did it up at the Fillmore. You know, we had a barrel of apples, and every apple had a syringe full of acid in it.
Oh, wow.
And we had a punch bowl right at the top of the stairs, free punch for everybody, full of acid. It was amazing, you know. You go out and play the gig, man, and people were just climbing the walls, dancing crazy, taking their clothes off, you know. And we'd go on till dawn, you know, because Graham had a thing with the police, you know, to let us go beyond 2 a.m.
Yeah, Do you remember any of the clubs that you would frequent, or you said you did some street singing with some of the cats in Oakland? But were there clubs in Oakland that you remember going to even in the early '60s that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we you know, in Frisco they had the Purple Onion, they had the Hungry Eye, they had the Jazz. What was it? City Jazz Club. Oakland, they had Toshies over there.
The Basin and Street West, maybe?
Yeah. Street West, I remember that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I saw a lot of great acts. You know, I saw early Ray Charles, man. I saw Bobby Blue Bland over there, you know.
Did you get a chance to see Coltrane?
I saw Coltrane once, yes, in San Francisco. It was an amazing night. He was at this jazz club on Broadway there. And it was so cool. He had Pharoah Sanders' second horn. He had Alice Coltrane on keys. And he blew this solo, and he walked off the stage and gave it over to Pharoah. And he walked up to the bar to the right. The bar was in the room. And he ordered a drink. And every once in a while, he'd pick up his horn and scream back at Pharoah, you know, and take his drink, and, you know, and pick up his horn and scream back at Pharoah. And then he walked down along the side of the stage to the bathroom on the side of the stage in the back, and you'd hear him blowing from the bathroom while he's pissing, you know, and he's blowing back at Pharoah, you know. It was so cool. It was an amazing night.
Can you tell me why it was cool for you?
Because they had such energy. They, you know, I'd see those cats. I didn't know what they were doing exactly, you know, musically, you know. But they had such force and such energy. They just, you know, pushed the air back and blew you away, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That energy always connected with me. I love that about music, you know. And some guys just, bam, have that energy, you know, and just push away, you know, the air and just open up, you know, the world for you with their music. It's, you know, I've always been attracted to the energy.
One of the L's on my show is life. And what I mean about life is overcoming adversity. And I was just hoping you could talk to the audience about a time in your career or in your life where you were fighting it. It could have been the music, could have been anything. You overcame it. How you overcame it, and how you made you stronger.
I don't know. You know, there's a lot of adversity in anybody's career, I'm sure. You know, I've missed out on opportunities and had people, you know, miss out on opportunities with me and, you know, have records put out, nobody does anything with them, you know, things like that. But, you know, I just go about my business. I keep on singing and writing songs and performing. And luckily, you know, people want to see me, so I go out and play, and people come, you know, and that's basically all I've ever wanted to do. And that's the gravy for me, is those live shows and, you know, to be able to go up and say, hey, I just wrote this. You want to hear a new song, everybody, you know, and what do you think of this, you know, and just go out and do that. And that, to me, is the whole point of it. And I really don't care about anything else, you know, adversity or anything else.
Yeah, but here's the problem. You had to go through the adversity in order to prove to yourself that you could still move forward and get stronger from it. So, I mean,
everybody told me when I began, you know, mm-hmm. my life, you know, my career in music, or opened the Matrix, or started a band, you know, or you can't do this, you can't do that, or, you know, that won't work, this won't work. You know, I just follow my own inner guide and do what I want to do and see where it falls, you know. I mean, it's stupid to criticize or analyze or, you know, even contemplate or discuss anything you're going to do. It's best to just do it.
Right, right.
And then let all that other stuff happen. In the meantime, you've moved on to the next thing, you know. People can talk all they want, you know. It doesn't mean anything. You know, you just, if you got something to do, do it. Felicia and Jack Cassidy were the two main cats, you know. They were, like, exploring and, you know, God, I used to love watching the Dead. I, you know, in the early days before the Dead became monsters, you know, they, you know, I'd stand out there and I'd stand right in the front of the stage and watch Garcia just take the band up and up. And I'd watch, you know, Phil Lesh just come booming in with that bass, you know, just come bam, you know, behind him, and just, man, they would just build a roar and the thing would move like a giant rolling ball. Man, it was just amazing, you know. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, one of the great bass players, you know, like Cassidy, but, you know, stories I can tell you.
You know, Cassidy was, Cassidy played, he locked the groove, where Lesh was just soloing. I mean, how much credit do you give Kreutzmann for holding it together?
I give him a lot, actually, you know, and I remember when they first brought Mickey in, you know, and they were trying to get the two of them to work together. It was like a little tense there at first. But Kreutzmann, I always liked his drumming. I thought he was a solid dude, man.
What I mean, so fucking funky, but I'm clean. Do you know what I mean? Well, I turn my tricks in my Cadillac, but I don't know.
Music on the Jake Feinberg Show, brought to you by the Stereo Hospital, the Circle Tree Ranch, Abbott Taylor Jewelers, and the Jewish Community Center of Southern Arizona, and we appreciate them and their support. All right, Mr. Bowen, what do you got for us, brother?
About?
What's the tune?
Oh, that? I'm Funky from Grudner.
You got it, baby. All right, Marty, be good.
All right, good talking to you. Have a wonderful 16.
Thank you. To you, too. Cheers.
All right.
All right. This is the Jake Feinberg Show. We'll be back in a little bit.